Butterfly with tribal. That's like epitome 90s 2000s.
That's what I want. Like, I feel like that would be so cute. And a lot of people tell me I don't have back dimples. I know I have back
dimples. I've got back dimples. You can't see them now because I'm fat, but they're more like back craters.
Like, I have to flex a certain way for you to see them, but they're there. Like, I know they are.
Like, I've got, obviously, I have my chin dimple, which
you
I don't
have this one, right?
Yeah. And then I have one here. And then when I smile certain ways, I've got them up here. And then I've got them on my back.
I just have my chin dimple.
And now I have them on my thighs. AKA cellulite.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to The Guilty and the Ghostly, brought to you by...
Not Red Bull, so that's not an actual Red Bull.
If you...
Red Bull want a sponsor.
Sponsor. White peach, that's the flavor.
I don't like peach, but the ice vanilla berry and the coconut berry...
Peach is mine. I freaking love peach. Anything peach. Peach candy. Peach soda. Peach. Oh, I just love peach. No. That's a no. Well, we thought it's been a while since you guys have had a sister episode.
Just the girls.
Just the gals. We kicked the boys out. They are not here. No boys allowed. Not invited. Zero.
Unless you're listening. Everybody's invited.
If you're listening.
But I doubt they're listening.
They don't listen ever.
Yeah.
Josh does if I tell him. I'm like, hey, did you listen to this week's episode? He's like, let me play it. I'm like, oh, okay, girl.
Yeah, Seth told me the other night. He's like, I've been a horrible brother. I never listened to the podcast. I was like, okay, all right.
I see you. Well, so Josh and I recorded an episode, which you guys would have heard it by now, and I'm super excited about it, with the detective. And last week, this will be 2 weeks ago when this, I've got to think this through. Since
we're like over stocking up on videos.
We're trying to get prepared because school's fixing to start, softball's fixing to start again, birthdays are coming up, so we're trying to get ahead.
Yeah, foreshadow.
So, with that being said, a couple of cases ago, we covered the Sylvia Likens case.
Yes, with everyone in the room.
Full
crowd.
Full crowd, full room. So on the end of that episode, I said, hey, there was a little snippet that I seen about somebody disappearing and I didn't remember who it was. I've got the update, girl.
Okay. Wait, so what was that again? Like, break that down for me, just in case, like, for the listeners.
For break down what?
Like, the case you were talking about.
Sylvia Likens. So, Sylvia Likens was a 16-year-old girl that was left into the monster's hands, Gertrude, where she recruited not just her and her kids, but neighborhood kids to torture and just unimaginable abuse to Sylvia until she passed away. Very sad episode.
Yes.
Trigger warnings all around. And if you have to skip that one, I completely understand. It was rough. But little side adventure at the end of that episode, I was like, hey, y'all, I seen this little post about somebody connected to that case had disappeared, like, in recent years.
Yeah.
But I didn't have any other information. It was just quick, showed up on my feed. It did that thing where it, like, you're reading something and it, like, jumps you back to the top of your page and then you can't find the post that you were just... I hate that.
Yeah.
found it. So I thought it was somebody that was related to Gertrude.
Mm-hmm.
I was wrong.
They were related to Sylvia?
They were related to Sylvia. So if you remember, Sylvia was the only singleton of siblings. She had two older siblings that were twins and two younger siblings that were twins.
Yeah.
This was one of the older twins. This was the sister, Diana, the one that came and bought them a sandwich that they mm-hmm. got in trouble for. Diana went missing. So this is on...
God, I can't imagine, like, what her parents had to go through with a missing child.
Oh, I know.
A traumatized child and then a...
Then, yeah. I don't know if her... I don't think her parents were living for this, but I could be wrong. No, I know her mother was not, because her mother passed away. I'm not sure about her father. But, anyways, older sister of young girl that was murdered 50 years ago disappeared. And so I've got the story.
Okay.
This is on, I'm trying to look for independent.co.uk is where I got this. So, the older sister of 16-year-old girl who was tortured and murdered 50 years ago has been found alive after being stranded for 2 weeks in a California desert.
How did she get there?
Let me tell you. So, Diana Bedwell is the older sister of Sylvia, like I said, and she survived on a tiny amount of food, including a pie and oranges left in her car. Her husband, Cecil, died before they were discovered. Managing to collect rainwater in cups, the 68-year-old retired school bus driver was found near a Boy Scouts camp near Warner Springs. The couple's 2014 white Hyundai Sonata was obscured by trees and surrounded by bush, making it invisible to helicopters conducting an aerial search. So they were, like, really off the beaten path. They couldn't be found. And they were actually really surprised that they were even able to find the vehicle. So the pair attempted to take a shortcut and then became lost in the rugged area. Authorities said the two were planning on going to their son's home in Palm Springs area for a Mother's Day dinner, but they did not show up there or return to their home in Orange County. Their son, Robert, spoke briefly to his mother's local newspaper when she was found. He said, "I'm just so concerned with my mom right now. To be in the middle of nowhere for 2 weeks is a lot, given her age." She did remain in the hospital and had not really spoken to authorities at this point, other than a 10-minute interview. They were really concerned because both her and her husband were diabetic. So that even escalates the danger level even more. They had last been seen on surveillance footage about 25 miles west of the wilderness camp on May 10th. And so, yeah, they were coming home. I want to say I've seen another source where they were coming home from a casino and had planned meeting their son for Mother's Day. And they took that little shortcut and got lost. And she was literally stranded out in the desert for 2 weeks.
They lost gas?
I assume. I don't know. I don't know if they wrecked or what happened. Yeah.
Stuck because, like, sand. Like, I'm thinking desert.
Yeah. Yeah. But for 2 weeks, she was stuck in the desert. And then her husband passed away during those 2 weeks while they were waiting to be found.
That's so sad.
So sad. Crazy.
That's insane.
And I put my phone down like I don't need it. And I need it for the story, so.
Well, while you're going to the story, you know, we brought up diabetes and everything. Diabetes. I was in the store the other day working, and this guy had on this shirt that said, "Don't be rude to people who have diabetes. They deal with pricks enough."
Oh, that's funny.
Because, like, the needles, you have to check your blood.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, so today's story, it's actually funny. So let me back up a little bit. I'm going to be relearning all of this with you. So this is one of the first stories that I researched. I guess it was back in... Well, I guess it wasn't one of the first. It was back in October last year. And so this facility is really close to one of our facilities where I work. So we have a facility close to this. Actually, it's on the property of this. And so it's really cool. Or right down the road, something like that. And I covered this on our podcast for my company with my coworker Paul, and we talked about it. We had a guy that actually works there and is local to the area. He came on that podcast and talked about his stories and what he's known. So it was really cool. And so you called me today and was like, hey, let's have a sister episode. I was like, cool, I've got one ready to go. Guess who called me today out of nowhere just to talk about the podcast was Paul, the guy that showed me this story. So shout out, Paul.
Shout out, Paul.
Shout out, Paul.
That's so crazy.
Yes. And he gave me a really good idea for our sinister submissions next month. So I'm going to go ahead and put it out into the universe. For sinister submissions in August, we want to cover near-death experiences.
Okay.
So if you have any near-death experiences, send them to us. We would love to share them. And I think Paul's actually going to come on and tell us a couple of stories that he has that has something to do with that. So,
Period.
With that being said,
I'll wait for next month, so cut this all out. But have you ever had a near-death experience?
I mean,
obviously childbirth is like the closest thing you're going to get to death.
Well, legit, that's probably the closest that I have been is when I went into labor with Addie. And because of all the issues that I had, that's probably the closest that I have been to dying. Yeah. Before and after labor. But yeah, that's probably. But other than that, no. The reason why I also wanted to do this one is when we interviewed Larry Lawson, we were talking to him, I think before, after we got done recording.
Detective?
That's the detective, yeah. We were talking to him, and I was explaining to him, yes, I love true crime, I love the paranormal, but another cool thing that I have found out that I really enjoy is the history of things. And ooh, it's thundering, you hear that? But another part of it I really enjoy is the history of things and learning about that and kind of digging into stuff and learning about stuff that I normally wouldn't have.
Yeah.
And I was telling him about this story. So there is a ghost story, but through research, I was able to track down where the ghost story actually originated from.
Okay.
So it's going to be a little bit different. So we are covering the Bellamy Bridge, the legend of the Burning Bride.
I don't think I've ever heard of this, actually.
I hadn't, until Paul. In 1686, Spanish governor of Florida dispatched an expedition to locate and seize a rumored French settlement near the Mississippi River. The mission was led by Marcos Delgado, accompanied by 13 Spanish soldiers. Say that 5 times fast.
13 Spanish soldiers.
That was once. You got 12 more. and 40 native warriors setting out from what is now Tallahassee, Florida. Then it was known as Mission San Luis. The expedition ventured west into the Florida wilderness. Eventually, their journey was halted by an enormous swamp. Delgado recorded the obstacle in his journal, writing, "There is a clay swamp, and in the center, a stream 36 feet wide and 6 feet deep. The swamp itself spans half a league in breadth. It was thick, and it was necessary to cut the path." And again, just finding people's journals from back then and seeing like what they wrote down, what they seen, I think is so cool.
Yeah.
I love that. Let's see here. What aisle?
Like Anne Frank.
Anne Frank?
Whenever they found her journal.
Oh, yeah. Historians believe the swamp and the stream he described were part of what is now known as the Chipola River. Delgado could never have imagined that the remote stretch of wilderness he documented would one day become the setting for one of Florida's most enduring ghost stories, the legend of Bellamy Bridge. Nearly 150 years later, a young couple arrived in Florida with the dreams of building a prosperous new life. Elizabeth Jane Croom was born in 1819 into one of North Carolina's most influential families. She bougie.
What's her name?
Elizabeth Jane Croom.
Wow. It's a very fancy name.
Fancy name for a fancy girl.
Prestigious house.
You crazy girl. Her father, Major General William Croom, commanded North Carolina troops during the War of 1812. And after his death, when Elizabeth was only 10 years old, she inherited a considerable fortune. As a young teenager, Elizabeth fell in love with Samuel C. Bellamy, an ambitious medical student studying at the prestigious University of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Their families were already connected. Elizabeth's older sister, Anne, had actually married Samuel's brother, Edward. And over the years, Elizabeth and Sam exchanged heartfelt letters while he completed his studies. So that's kind of cute.
Yeah, long-distance little relationship.
Their love only deepened with time. When Samuel finished medical school, the couple became engaged and decided to leave North Carolina behind. Along with Anne and Edward, they traveled south to Florida in search of opportunity. According to legend, Samuel built an elegant mansion overlooking the Chipola River. If you ain't building me a mansion, I don't want it.
Period.
The estate was surrounded by beautiful gardens overflowing with roses, and Elizabeth was so captivated by their new home that she insisted they be married there. Which I would too. Like, if I have just built the mansion of my dreams with all these gorgeous flowers and, like, you're in love with your home, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Like, I would too.
Like, people have weddings in their backyards and
it ain't nothing special. Yeah. Have you been watching Madison Humphreys? Do you watch her?
Yeah.
I freaking love her.
Oh my gosh. Oh, wait, not to get off topic, but you know that girl that, like, went all out for Secret Santa? I can't remember her name. Serena?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's moving.
I saw that, and she took her bathroom down. Yeah, and she peeled her wall of paint down, and it was, like, coming down in pieces.
And then she broke her mirror. She's like, I'll let maintenance figure that out.
Yeah, she's like, that's not my problem. I don't work here. Okay. So on May 11th, 1837, surrounded by family and friends and blooming roses, Elizabeth and Samuel exchanged vows beneath the warm Florida sun. Legend says they even wrote their own vows. Elizabeth ended hers with words that would echo through history. I will love you always and forever. Never will I leave you. So cute. Neither of them knew those words would soon become a haunting promise. It's raining outside. Following the ceremony, guests celebrated late into the evening with music, dancing, and laughter. And of course, Elizabeth, you know, bride, is exhausted. She's like, I just need a few moments.
Yeah.
Before joining in on these festivities. Like, I just need to decompress, which I'm like that too. Like, there's times where I'm like, okay, that's too much people, too much time. I just need to remove myself for a few minutes, take a little recharge. Break, a little recharge my battery. Yeah. So that's what our girl did. She was still dressed in her elaborate wedding gown. She sat beside a burning candle. As the celebration continued downstairs, no one noticed the danger. Then, a single scream shattered the music. Guests rushed towards the staircase, only to see Elizabeth standing at the top, her wedding dress completely engulfed in flames.
Oh my gosh.
Samuel raced to her, desperately trying to smother the fire with his bare hands. And although he managed to extinguish the flames, Elizabeth had already suffered catastrophic burns.
That is so sad. What the heck? And this is a real story?
We'll get there. For several agonizing days, she clung to life. But despite every effort to save her, Elizabeth succumbed to her injuries. According to legend, her final words repeated the vow she'd made only days before. I will love you always and forever. Never will I leave you. Samuel never recovered. Consumed by grief, he spent the next 16 years battling depression before taking his own life in Chattahoochee, Florida.
Stop. Oh my gosh.
His dying wish was to be buried beside Elizabeth. But the church refused. Believing suicide to be a mortal sin, they denied his request, and Samuel was buried instead in an unmarked grave.
What? Back in the day, they could do that?
Yeah, like, it, that was, like, one of the biggest sins was to take your own life. They considered that, like...
That's so crazy.
A huge sin.
Because that's not even... It doesn't even say that in the Bible, you know that, right?
Well, they didn't like it. They said no. Where are we? Here we go.
Blasphemy, y'all.
Blasphemy. Locals say that Elizabeth kept her promise. On foggy nights, a woman dressed in white is said to wander the swamps surrounding Bellamy Bridge, forever searching for the husband she was never allowed to spend eternity with. But here's the twist. It is a heartbreaking story.
But that's not how it happened.
Just one problem. Almost none of this actually happened.
What the heck?
So,
people just be coming up with this stuff? Just like, hey guys, yeah, there's this girl named Elizabeth. She caught on fire. And
on her wedding day, in her dress.
And now she's haunting her husband and everyone around her.
We'll talk about how obviously there's no way to prove exactly how this story came to be, but I do have some information where they believe it came from.
Okay.
Although none of this actually happened, historical records paint a very different picture, and it's still a sad story, so get ready. Elizabeth and Samuel weren't married in Florida. They were actually married on July 15th, 1834, at the Croom family estate in North Carolina. Samuel was 24 years old, and Elizabeth was only 15.
Ew!
A young age, by today's standard, but of course back then,
it didn't matter.
That was normal. That you'd marry your cousin. That was, you know.
Anybody and everybody needed to be married.
You just need to get married. Well, in December of 1835, Elizabeth gave birth to their first son, Alexander. And by early 1836, Elizabeth, Samuel, Anne, and Edward Bellamy all relocated permanently to Florida. By the 1820s, North Carolina farmland had become exhausted from decades of farming. Wealthy families increasingly looked toward Florida's fertile land and hoping to establish new plantations and prosperous estates. Anne and Edward purchased the land where Bellamy Bridge stands today. Samuel and Elizabeth settled about 3 miles northwest of Mariana, I'm not sure.
Mariana Trench.
Yeah. Establishing Rock Cave Plantation along Baker Creek. But then, tragedy struck. On May 11th, 1837, Elizabeth died. Not by fire. Historical evidence strongly suggests that she actually succumbed to malaria.
What is that disease again?
It's a disease that devastated early Florida settlers. Victims often suffered high fevers, crushing fatigue, vomiting, headaches, chills, and in severe cases, coma and death. And it's normally transmitted by mosquitoes.
Oh, gosh.
Elizabeth was only 18 years old, and the tragedy did not end there. Just 7 days later, her 18-month-old son, Alexander, also died, most likely from the same illness. It is believed that Anne Bellamy cared for both the mother and child during their final days. They were buried together in a small Bellamy family cemetery. And unlike the Burning Bride story, the ending of Samuel Bellamy's life is supported by historical records. Following the deaths of his wife and son, Samuel spiraled into depression and alcoholism. His grief never eased. On December 28th, 1853, at only 44 years old, Samuel took his own life.
And this is a real story?
This is, from what they can tell, this is the actual story. Okay. He was buried in an unmarked grave in Chattahoochee, Florida. So where did this Burning Bride story come from?
Yeah.
If Elizabeth never died in a fire, how did the legend begin? And the answer may lie in a novel. The story of Bellamy Bridges' Burning Bride didn't become widely known until the 1940s. Many historians believe it was actually inspired by author Carolina Lee Hintz. In her novel, Marcus Warland, Hintz told the story of a young enslaved woman named Cora. Because she was so highly regarded by the family who enslaved her, Cora was allowed to celebrate her wedding inside the plantation home, which wasn't a common practice back then. Exhausted after the festivities, she fell asleep in a chair nearby a candle, which ignited her dress. Despite desperate attempts to save her, Cora died several days later and was buried in the family cemetery. Soon afterward, people claimed to see her ghost wandering the property. So, very similar to The Burning Bride of Bellamy. But this is just a made-up story. This is just a book. The confusion only grew because Marcus Warland also featured a character named Mistress Bellamy. Adding one final twist, Carolina Lee Hintz moved to Mariana, Florida in 1852, where she lived until her death in 1856. Over time, the fictional tragedy of Cora became intertwined with the real Bellamy family. Generation after generation retold the story. The details would change, facts would blur, but eventually the fiction became folklore. So today, Bellamy Bridge still stretches across the Chipola River. Visitors claim to hear whispers drifting through the trees. Others report strange lights, unexplained voices, and sightings of a woman in white wandering through the mist. So is it Elizabeth Bellamy? Or is it just a legend that has taken on its own life?
Yeah. Have you, do you remember seeing that Sam and Dean episode? Or Sam and Dean.
Supernatural.
Where it was the guy, it's like one of the, like, early seasons. And these two nerd guys go online and they make this fake account for this, like, hell house.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, amps.
Manifest it, yeah.
Do you think that actually happens?
So, crazy enough, all of this is full circle. So, we actually discussed a case with Larry, the detective.
Called, what is up with me and Larry today?
You guys are in sync. There's actually a case called the Philip Experiment.
Oh.
And I've got to look into it. He was telling us about it. I may get some details wrong. But this group created a fictitious character named Philip.
Mm-hmm.
And then the haunting started. And they had like a whole story for Philip, like a whole life built, had everything. And then haunting started happening, and it followed what they formulated for Philip's story. And so the question is, did they manifest it and cause it and give it energy to happen?
Yeah.
Or what?
What happened there?
Yeah, what happened there? So same thing with this. Did they manifest it? Or is it, you know, what was her name? Elizabeth. They do believe that somebody by the name of Elizabeth passed away there from malaria with her son. It could still be her. She's just not the burning bride.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Or, I mean, even if they're not manifesting it and it's just like you're in your room alone, there's nothing playing, you hear a sound, you automatically think, oh, that's someone breaking into my house, you know?
Yeah, your mind starts
like,
playing.
Oh, it's the washer stuff.
Yeah.
The dryer.
You just start feeding into mm-hmm. it and gets spooky. Yeah.
Like you get paranoid, you make yourself paranoid.
Yeah.
Like washing my face, I'll be like, there's someone behind me, and then I'll like,
yes,
have to open
you like
my
have
eyes.
To hurry. I do that in the shower, I'll be washing, be like, okay, if I open my eyes and somebody's standing here right now, I'm going to scream, and then I'll hurry and be like, okay, I'm safe. We're good.
That's what I do.
We watched, when we watched The Mummy, you were here when we watched that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that Addie went and locked
yeah.
all the doors? She was terrified.
Oh,
I know.
But yeah. Was that the end of the case?
pretty much.
One more page.
It was just kind of my closing. Just kind of talking about how it's interesting how history and folklore become intertwined, mm-hmm. and they build onto each other and turn into this huge story. But it is satisfying to be able to go back and say, okay, here's this and this. And if you cross them together, there's the story. And there's a little bit of truth to it and a little bit of information, but...
You're almost like investigating, like connecting the yarn.
Yes. You know? So it was really cool. It was a really cool story. But yeah, that's it. That's basically it. That's the story. It's a quick one. Ooh.
Well, it's a good thing we're almost done.
Yeah, because
y'all almost left us.
It's storming. And the intercept said no moss. So hopefully we got all that.
Hopefully.
But we have some fun things coming, guys. So Larry will be posted next week. This will be sprinkled in there. I'm not sure if it's going to be a full episode or a bonus episode. We just needed some sisterly bonding time, basically, is all this boiled down to. And Josh is out of town. Boys are at work, so we're like, hey, let's do it.
And I got off work early today.
Period.
Yeah. You know, like, going back off of, like, feeding into it and, like, everything, like, it almost reminds me of, like, the Salem Witch Trials, too, which I think we should cover for sure.
Oh, 100%. That's going to be a long research, but I cannot
Because it's not
wait.
Even, like, I'm sure there were probably witches back then. There's still witches today, you know, but, like... The extreme, like, oh, that lady didn't want to go out with me. She's a witch. Like,
yes.
That was crazy.
And what qualified them as a witch, you know, they could have just been, like, a midwife who was using, like, herbs and teas and stuff to help. And it's beneficial for them, but they're like, witch.
Or, like, the girls going out and dancing, they were like, you're a witch.
That's another thing I want to cover is the, what's it called?
I know what you're talking
the
about.
Dancing, uh-huh. The dancing plague.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we'll have to cover the dancing plague.
Yeah, there's some really cool stories. I can't wait. Like, I know we've only been doing this for a year, but there's so much
there's
true crime.
So
there's so much.
Much
paranormal. Like, we might be doing this.
We might be doing this a while. I did just finish, almost finished. I'm still researching, but the Radium Girls. Oh, girl, that is a sad story.
What was that about?
You'll find out. I've been reading the book. It's really good. It's about the girls in, I think it's World War II, if I remember right. And they needed to paint, like, watches and compasses and aircraft gadgets to glow in the dark during the war so they could see it.
Yeah.
And all of these girls were actually doing it. And it was a very glamorous job. And they made decent money for it, especially back then. And come to find out, the way they were painting these gadgets, they were literally putting radium into their mouths. And obviously that caused a lot of health issues and death. And the... big businessmen that allowed them to do that, it's often questioned, did they know that it was poisoning them? A lot of people believe that they 100% knew, but they were making enough money that they were like, push it under the rug. We don't talk about that. And that's all I'll say for now because we're going to cover it. But very interesting. It's a really good book. I've really enjoyed it. So,
period.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know there's been a lot of crazy stuff happening in the world right now.
Yes.
So, I just say, like, everyone out there, we're thinking about you. Stay safe. Like, seriously, it's getting crazy, y'all.
It's getting crazy out there.
It's getting crazy, but, like, for real, we're all praying. We're praying for y'all. Y'all are in our thoughts, for sure.
It's wild. So, I guess if that's it for today... Here's our normal begging for you to like, follow, subscribe, comment, rate our shows.
Repost.
All the things.
Recommend a friend.
Yes.
Hear them talk about true crime. Hey, I have a true crime.
Send us your recommendations. Like we said, there's so many stories. Sometimes it's hard to just pick one. Send us what you want to hear. If you have any themes for sinister submissions, if you have a sinister submission, just send it on over to theguiltyandtheghostlypodcast@gmail.com.
And remember, like, we're kind of small, tight-knit community right here. We are growing, but, like, whenever y'all are texting us, we're seeing these tags. Like,
the emails, yes.
And everything. We're going to be, like, actively trying to accommodate for crimes y'all want to, or cases y'all want to hear, you know, stuff like that.
And we try to reply to all the comments and all the messages, and we appreciate all of you guys. So I guess that's it. Join us next week where the guilty confess.
And the ghostly never rest.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.